Hi, everyone. So the first org I want to tell you about today is called Selecta. It's a system for heterogeneous cloud storage configuration for data analytics. And this is joint work with Heiner Litz and Christos Kozirakis. Data analytics are commonly run in the cloud for high elasticity and high cost efficiency. But in order to run analytics efficiently in the cloud, users are faced with many cloud configuration decisions, including the cluster size, meaning the number of nodes that we want to use, the VM type, this involves decisions of how many CPU cores we want, the amount of memory capacity, the network bandwidth, and the use of accelerators. And there's also a lot of storage options. We have to choose the storage API, the locality of the storage, and also the media itself. So this vast configuration space makes cloud configuration very difficult for users. Yet getting these decisions right is critical for performance and cost, as we're going to see. And existing work with systems like Paris and CherryPick has already looked at automating decisions like the cluster size and the VM types. But the choice of storage has received little attention. Yet configuring storage is particularly important for these big data workloads. And the storage landscape itself is very vast. So for example, users can choose between block, file, or object storage. And let's say we go with block storage, we still have to decide whether we want this storage to be local, meaning block devices that are attached directly to our VMs, or remote, meaning volumes we access over the network, like Elastic Block Service and Amazon. And let's say we go with remote block storage volumes, we still need to decide on the storage media. We can have regular SAS or SATA SSDs, hard drives, which are often further subdivided into cold or throughput optimized, and we also have high-performance NVMe flash devices. So there are many decisions we need to make, and the other realization is that these data analytics workloads often have multiple data streams. For example, you have the original input and the final output data that these jobs are reading and writing, and this is often accessed in large sequential chunks. But we also have intermediate data, like the data that gets shuffled or broadcasted between map and reduce stages in analytics. And this data is typically more randomly accessed. So actually, these decisions that we need to make should be done for all of these individual data streams within these workloads. And then the cloud storage landscape is only getting more diverse as new technologies emerge, like 3D XPoint. To give a sense of how challenging storage configuration can be, we look at an example where we're just selecting between three different types of block storage options. And we keep all other parameters fixed, like the VM size and or the VM type and the cluster size. So we look at three different types of applications, or three different queries here on the bottom in the x-axis. And the three types of devices that we look at are local NVMe flash devices attached to each VM in an 8-node cluster. We look at a hybrid storage scheme where we put input-output data on remote SSD volumes, but we keep intermediate shuffle data on local NVMe. That's shown in orange. And the gray bars show what happens when all the data is stored on remote SSD volumes. Now, comparing execution time for these applications, we see that the first application is I/O bound, so it benefits from the highest raw throughput storage, which is the local NVMe. The second workload is CPU bound, so it actually performs the same regardless of the storage option used. So we might as well go with the cheapest option, which would be the remote SSD. And the last workload is also I/O bound, but it has a lot of interleaving of read and write requests, which cause interference on flash due to the asymmetric performance of read and write requests. And so this application actually benefits from separating these two data streams because we isolate the read and write streams in time. The takeaway here is even if we limit ourselves to just a few options, selecting the right storage is non-trivial. And this decision only gets more complex as we add more options to the table. Yet solving this challenge is critical because it has high impact on performance and cost. So to give an example of this, we look at the performance of a single query, a TPCDS query on Spark, and we compare its performance and cost across 10 different VM and storage configurations. And we denote these configurations along the x-axis. We're specifying the VM size that we use, the storage option we use for the original input and output data. We use the HDFS mount here, and the intermediate data storage that we use. This is how we define our 10 different configurations. And then if we look at the discrepancy between the lowest performing and the highest performing instance, we see that, or cluster configuration, we see that there's a 24x gap between these. And here we're comparing both, we're varying both VM and storage option configurations. But even if we look at just for one VM family, and we look at the impact of different storage options, there's still over an order of magnitude difference in performance. And this is actually contrary to what a previous study published at NSDI in 2015 found when analyzing Spark performance. They found that if we were to optimize performance for I/O completely, we can expect only up to about 19% benefits for Spark performance. Now, Spark has actually evolved significantly since the version used in that analysis, and there's been several updates to optimize different compute bottlenecks. And so this makes sense that storage is becoming a more important factor for performance. And then if we look at cost on the secondary y-axis here, the difference between the lowest cost and highest cost of these configurations is also significant. So the takeaway is there's a lot of performance and cost on the table if we get these decisions right. This motivates us to introduce a tool called Selecta, which recommends near-optimal cloud VM and storage configurations to users based on their performance cost objectives. And it does so by training on sparse training data that is collected across jobs. In addition to introducing the Selecta tool, we also use our evaluation of Selecta to explore the cloud storage configuration space in the context of data analytics, and to answer questions like which storage options are a good fit for different data streams, and what lessons can we learn to guide the design of future storage systems. So let's take a look at how Selecta makes recommendations for users. The inputs to Selecta are a set of training applications, which we profile on a subset of the candidate configurations we want to consider. And we'll see later that we only need to profile on about 20% of the candidate configurations. Then we also have a target application, which is the one for which we want to get a recommendation from Selecta. And this application needs to be profiled on two reference configurations. Then the user also tells us what is their performance cost objective. So this could be an objective to minimize the cost of the execution of the job, or it could be to optimize performance within a certain budget, for example. Internally, Selecta represents these inputs as a matrix, a performance matrix, where the applications are the rows and the configurations are the columns. So each entry Pij in this matrix is the performance of application I on configuration J. And we normalize performance for each application along its performance on one particular reference configuration, which is why we have a column of ones. So the blue entries here are the data that we got from our training applications. And you'll notice that this training set is sparse because we do not require that all applications are profiled across all configurations. And the final row in this matrix represents our target application data. So there's two entries here because we have two reference configurations. Now, what Selecta does is it uses collaborative filtering as an approach to fill in the missing entries in this matrix. And we'll talk more about how this technique works in a few slides. But what we're particularly interested in is filling in this bottom row because this tells us what is the expected performance of our target application across the configurations that we haven't profiled on. And once we have these performance predictions, we can use the user's performance cost objective to rank the different configurations and make a recommendation to the user. Now, Selecta targets jobs that are recurring, and it's often the case in data analytics production clusters that we have jobs that are periodically rerun as new data is come in. So when the user gets this recommendation, they will run their job and they can actually feed their data back into the system to augment the training set and receive even more accurate predictions in the future. So the actual method that Selecta uses for performance prediction is called latent factor collaborative filtering. And this is a common approach used in recommender systems, such as the Netflix challenge, which is the challenge of recommending movies to users based on the movies they have watched and enjoyed or disliked in the past. Now, in the context of Selecta, instead of recommending movies to users, we're recommending configurations to applications. And so we decompose our matrix P of performance measurements for applications along different configurations into three matrices called U, lambda, and V. And this lambda matrix in particular is what I want to focus on. It's a diagonal matrix that contains similarity concepts for applications and configurations. And the way to think of these similarity concepts is as features that relate applications to configurations. Now, collaborative filtering automatically extracts these features, so it's not something that we need to engineer ourselves like we would if we wanted to use a content-based prediction method, like a random forest predictor, for example. And we don't have a physical interpretation from this method for each of these similarity concepts, but I'll give an example just to illustrate how the method works. So a hypothetical physical interpretation for a similarity concept is random I/O throughput. Then the matrix U would tell us for each application, how strongly correlated is it to the similarity concept? In other words, for each application, how much does its performance depend on random I/O throughput? And matrix V would tell us for each configuration, how correlated it is to the similarity concept. So how much random I/O throughput does this each configuration provide? And so the advantage of the collaborative filtering method is by decomposing this matrix and iteratively updating values until we get minimum error for the values that we know are true in this matrix, we don't actually have to engineer features we think are going to be good predictors. And collaborative filtering is also appropriate for this use case because it works well on sparse training data. And our data is sparse because we really want to minimize the number of applications and the number of configurations we need to profile across. And finally, the method is also agnostic to the types of configurations and the types of applications that we run this method on. So to evaluate Selecta, we run over 100 different kinds of Spark SQL and ML jobs. And we consider a configuration space consisting of 17 different configurations. And we focus on the storage aspect as well. So we look at two different VM families and three different sizes within each family. Our experiments are done on Amazon EC2. And we look at 8 node clusters. In terms of storage options, we explore remote block storage using the Elastic Block service in Amazon. And we consider hard drive storage and SSD storage for these. We look at local NVMe block storage. And we also consider S3 for our object storage. So we first look at Selecta's accuracy. And to test and train Selecta, we use leave-one-out cross-validation, which means we train on our 100 applications and treat one application at a time as the test application. Now, the way we define accuracy is, what is the probability of Selecta predicting a configuration that is near optimal? And to define what near optimal is, we use a threshold. And this is what we sweep along the x-axis in this plot. So to understand how to read this plot, let's say our performance objective was we wanted to optimize performance. We want to find the highest performing instance. Then we're interested in looking at the blue line in this plot. And let's say that we consider a prediction accurate enough if Selecta gives us a recommendation for a configuration that has performance that is within 10% of the actual optimal performing instance. That means our threshold is 10%. And what we see is that Selecta has a 94% probability of giving us this accurate prediction. Similarly, for cost, Selecta, if we again use a threshold of 10%, we're happy with a prediction that is within 10% of the actual optimal cost. Selecta has an 80% probability of giving an accurate prediction. And the reason why we use this threshold metric instead of just saying, did Selecta give us the absolute number one instance is because we don't know whether the second best is really far off from the best performing or very close. And so this threshold metric allows us to be more robust to noise. And you can see that predicting the product of cost times performance and minimizing this as our objective gets to be more difficult. And this is because any error that Selecta makes in performance predictions gets amplified because the cost is also a function of execution time, multiplied by the cost per time of the resources. But the dotted line shows what happens when we feedback measurements from the original recommendation in the first round, and we see performance improvements, particularly for that cost performance objective. The next thing we do is compare Selecta to some baselines to understand how the systems compare. So we compare against a random forest predictor, which is the approach taken by a system called Paris, published at SOCC last year. And for the random forest predictor, we engineer features such as the CPU utilization and random I/O and different throughput that we measure on the, at the storage layer while profiling applications. So this method actually receives more information directly from the user. However, Selecta's ability to leverage a sparse training set with collaborative filtering still outperforms this approach. And we also plot here some simple heuristic methods, such as default configurations suggested by Databricks engineering blogs. And we also see what happens if you just use simple heuristics, like I'm always going to use the maximum cost per time configurations or the minimum cost per time configurations. So choosing the maximum cost per time is actually good for performance, but this breaks down if you have other objectives, like minimizing the cost of the execution for your job. We also run a sensitivity analysis, and you can find a more detailed exploration of this in the paper. But the question here is, how dense does the training matrix need to be in order for us to have accurate predictions? So we're sweeping the fraction of configurations that we need to profile for each training application, and we see that it only needs to be about 20% before we get diminishing returns. So what did we learn at the end of the day exploring the cloud configuration landscape for data analytics? We learned that NVMe storage is not only the highest performing, that's not a surprise, but it also turned out that for the vast majority of applications, it was the most cost efficient. And this is because of the significant gains in performance. Even though NVMe costs more per bit than the other alternatives, it ended up coming out top in terms of execution cost of the job. So this makes NVMe flash a great fit for intermediate data, which has a short lifetime. But it does get more expensive as storage that you want to keep around for long-term storage. And presumably, the original input data and final output results fit into that category. So we find that S3 provides a good cost-performance balance for longer-term data storage. We also found that it's actually very difficult for any configuration to provide the right compute, storage bandwidth, and storage capacity balance for these workloads. And if we look at trends like serverless computing, these platforms enable us to have fine-grained allocation of compute and memory resources for applications. And so our analysis actually motivates a similar story for storage. We'd like to be able to allocate fine-grained amounts of storage capacity and bandwidth and have this be disaggregated from compute resources so we can maximize efficiency in terms of cost and resource utilization. And we also find that there's a need to optimize across layers in the software stack, meaning the applications, frameworks, and operating systems, because many of the configurations that we looked at failed to really achieve their hardware potential due to software inefficiencies. So one example is we expected that configurations using hard drive storage for input and output data streams, since they have large sequential accesses, we expected these configurations to offer good performance cost balance. But what we found is that although individual Spark executors in the job would be issuing large sequential IOs, if we looked at the storage layer, we saw a lot of random IOs. And this is because the requests of different Spark executors in the same job were interleaving at the storage layer. So an example of an optimization would be to tag these requests and provide isolation across the stack. So we saw that cloud configuration is difficult, yet absolutely critical for performance and cost. We introduced a tool called Selecta that enables us to have recommendations for near-optimal cloud configurations based on a user's performance cost objective and sparse training data collected across jobs. We also use Selecta to explore the cloud storage landscape in the context of data analytics and provide some insights for the design of future storage systems. I will conclude here, and I'm happy to take questions. Thank you.
Hi, Eddie Kohler. Thank you. Nice talk. I had a question about another paper of Kay Osterholtz that appeared at SOSP most recently, where the claim was that if Spark was changed to only block on I/O, that made its performance more predictable. Do you have any comments on that? Do you think that that would help Selecta be more precise?
So you're saying if Spark was to block on I/O?
If you don't know this paper, I don't mean to be sandbagging you with it or anything. It just seemed like an interesting point where that line of work turned into some work that was like, let's make Spark's performance easier to predict using models. Your work seems like, if Spark's performance was easy to predict using models, we have a good model and we can then like generalize that to the performance of your application. Mm-hmm. So if you had thought about that.
Sure, yeah. So I think the approach here is more taking a black box approach where we just analyze the performance. But if we have, if the system is more predictable and we can use some kind of modeling techniques, then I think a hybrid approach where we take a modeling approach to understand what we expect and then maybe kind of check this with Selecta and see if there's a conflict of predictions or not. But particularly for this method, it does take a black box approach, but there's definitely an option of doing a kind of hybrid predictor with modeling approaches.
Thank you.
Fred Douglas, Perspective Labs. Can you flip back to your early chart where you had the two axes of cost and performance?
With?
The cost and performance on the Y and Y2 axis, very early on in the talk.
Right, okay.
So the one on the left, for example, has a very high execution time and also the highest cost. And you basically, you put this out there and said basically, you know, this is a bad thing, but didn't comment on exactly what the factors are that go into that. So is it that it's running longer and so you have other overheads besides the storage costs that are, being added in from the cloud server for other things it's doing?
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
So
good question.
So how much more complex would this be if you then factor in other optimizations so that while you're doing this, you're also trying to figure out, okay, what server are you going to be using it on? Are you going to use spot instances versus some sort of reserved instance and so on? Or you're doing storage in isolation, right?
Mm-hmm. So definitely the cost here is the cost of both the VM resources and the actual storage. And so when workloads run for a very long time, its cost is bloated not just by the fact that it's consuming storage for longer, but these CPU resources are actually quite expensive. Now, if we can disaggregate storage completely, so if we can kind of have these independently, and I mean, storage is still difficult. You need this storage to be accessible for the duration of the entire job still. So there's maybe optimizations you can do with spot instances to save on the cost of the execution time. But yeah, as soon as the workload runs for longer, you are gonna pay for it in cost.
Hi, Ekin Akkush from Bell Labs. I had a quick question regarding these configurations. Do you have a rough idea on how many total configurations there are, roughly?
So in terms of different storage configurations, there's hundreds if you consider different optimizations, and it's thousands if you're also considering the different VMs that you host.
Right, so that brings me to my related question, which is, some of these configurations are basically changing probably just one parameter at a time, right? So then when you are choosing these 20% of these configurations that you are using in your training, do you do any tricks or is it all just random?
In our evaluation, it was random.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. Hi, Zhen Jie from U2. I have two questions. So the first one is, do you assume the performance is independent of the data distribution? So what happens if you apply the analytic jobs on a new database?
What happens if, sorry?
If you run an older job on a new data set.
Right, okay, yeah, so great question. So we do assume that the jobs are recurring and we can have different data sets. And we actually did see cases where this is a single job running with a small and a large data set, and it's its CPU utilization over time. So it has the user's CPU time in blue and the I/O wait time in purple. So clearly it goes from CPU bound to I/O bound as we change its data set. And so for this, to address this case, CPU utilization is collected by Selecta. And we look at whether there's a threshold in the change. We look at whether there's a change in the IO CPU weight utilization. And if it exceeds a threshold, we basically conclude that the CPU to IO balance of this application has completely changed. And we flagged the user to treat this as a separate job and reprofile. So this would be caught only in the feedback loop of Selecta.
OK, so the second question is, how do you handle the code style problems, which is very common in recommendation systems, yep. Especially when you have a new storage option and mm-hmm. new application? So how can you initialize the configurations?
Right. So the cold start problem is definitely an issue that we need to face. And we basically require that the user, so in the paper, we have a more detailed analysis of the cold start sensitivity analysis. And we need about, there's a certain number of times we need a percentage of the data that needs to have a particular configuration profiled on for us to be able to make accurate predictions with that configuration. And so we would need the user to provide a certain level of a profiling of applications on that new configuration before it really is being considered by the system.